Welcome to Ask Better Questions on Purpose, a podcast where real conversations inspire deeper connection and curiosity with your hosts, AJ Bieber and Dr. Stephen Bagley. Let's dive in.
Hey, we're here. I have a special guest with us today because I like this guy. One of my best friends introduced me to him, and when we got together, well, we knew we were brothers from another mother type of thing, and I really was impressed with the fact that Michael Wiseman cared for people so deeply that he had this conflict in his life earlier. He was a successful businessman in Orange County. He was working with National Products, marketing them, and had a staff of 60 plus, and everything was going great. Then things started to change. And what Mike knows about advertising is kind of amazing to me. He's worked with all these ideas and all of these products, and as he's done it, it's moved him towards a particular service that he provides. And I want him to tell you about it. Mike, how many years were you a market man?
Well, thanks for your kindness, Steve. I was in the marketing, advertising, and communications field for around 42 years.
Oh, that's too long. That's way too long.
Where were you 15 years ago? I could have used that advice.
And in that, what did you see happening in culture from the position of being a marketer that made marketing harder and harder?
I'll tell you what I saw, Steve, is a backdrop of mistrust. So many of the problems that I was educated to solve, for me, the only lens I could wear was a marketing lens. And it was causing a great consternation for me because, you know, being in that business for 42 years, on an ongoing basis, I was seeing the good, the bad, and the ugly of corporate culture. And I have to tell you, and we all feel this, we all know this, especially within a business context, you can walk into any organization and almost immediately know whether there's joy, purpose, meaning, or whether there's dysfunction, anger, depression, and angst. And it's palpable. You can feel it, and you can see it, and you can hear it. And so for me personally, I was struggling because, as you said, I'm a people person. I love people. And it's interesting for me, looking back, to realize that a guy who was not really well equipped for relationships because of my background, right? My dad was military. I moved every 3 years and I was always the odd man out. So I was either trying to fight my way into relationships. And even if I could achieve that, I didn't have the skill set to pour into them because my fear was that I was going to be leaving in a few years. And so it kind of stunted my growth, right? So here I'm an adult. I'm in this business that requires human interaction and collaboration because we're in the business of creating ideas and selling ideas. We're not a factory pumping out products. And so those human skills were so necessary. So it was just kind of an awakening for me, Steve. It was frustrating to me. Why can't we solve these problems for these companies? And the economy was, well, what have you done for me lately? And all this effort and focus on the campaign and how many things did we sell this week and how many phone calls? And now in today's market, how many likes do you get on social media? And what I realized was that the issues that we were dealing with were much deeper. They were human issues. They had to do with relationships and trust, not with products and services. And so there's this constant tension that was always there for me.
But the creative genius that I know you to be, and I can say that out loud in front of other people, you created an approach to the problem. Tell us about that approach, because there's two parts for those that are listening. There's the part of the marketeer guy getting on purpose with helping his client base. And then there's this other part of Mike that went, I have a bigger purpose than this. And we'll get to that part. You created something to address the problem you were seeing. You were able to start measuring things.
That's right.
So that you could help you.
Yes.
But you could help others. So What's that called?
It's a model of trust building that we call the trust pulse. So think of a doctor's office and going in and you're not quite sure what you're suffering from, but something isn't right. You're just not feeling right. And you go in and what happens? When's the last time you had a physical? Oh, it's been quite a few years. Well, it's time to get a benchmark. So what do? They do the blood draw. And why do they do that? Because you can mask all kinds of symptoms, right? So we created this trust pulse tool, which helps us measure trust. So the trust pulse is like the blood panel, because the blood results that come back, they don't lie. And so in the case of trust, our trust pulse doesn't lie either, because what it does is it uncovers areas of strength. It also uncovers what we call the trust gap, where we need more practice in certain areas to build trust. And from that, we created a model of five values dimensions that we call the five C's. And every one of these components, out of all the research that we did, Steve, there were these constant themes that kept running through positive relationship building. And we realized that we were onto something, because we created a tool set, a practical tool set that people could use to gauge where their strengths and weaknesses were in the relationships that were important to them. And we saw great results with this, both from an organizational standpoint, but also from a personal and professional and spiritual growth standpoint. Right? Because these are human behaviors that we're talking about. So it doesn't matter whether you've got the boxes in an org chart. An organization is nothing more than a group of relationships that are being managed. And companies are not comprised by title boxes. They're comprised by human beings and people that have needs. And so this Trust Pulse survey has really opened up the door to where we can come in and help people who are maybe depressed, maybe they feel abandoned like I did. Maybe there's something going on in a relationship that they can't put their finger on, but they know that's not healthy. You know, I had one guy talk to me years ago who was one of those people in an organization. He was in his mid-60s. He'd come for the money. He stayed too long. He was literally abused at work. And what happened? He was carrying that home with him every day into his relationships at home, which were the most important relationships that he had. And he felt like a failure at home and at work.
So it sounds like you created this measurement tool that forced you into being a counselor.
You know what, Steve? I realized that this was my purpose. This was what I was made for. And I had to not only see it theoretically through the business lens and the marketing lens, but I had to feel it personally in the people that I you know, the hundreds and hundreds of people that I was able to interview, but then most importantly, just my own personal story. And when I felt it and I realized, oh my gosh,
yeah,
if I can find help through this, I can help other people. Building trusting relationships requires intention. You know, how you're going to show up every day, you have to be intentional if you want to have a deep, meaningful relationship. You don't fall into it. I'm sure that many of us, you know, many of the listeners have just a number of superficial relationships, but I'm not drawn to them. I don't gravitate to them. I take up some space and nod and smile, but I need something deeper. We all need something deeper. We can't live in a superficial world with superficial relationships.
AJ has a question. I can see it on the face.
Yeah.
So, Mike, you were a leader of this.
Correct.
You implemented this to the
people.
That's
correct.
Okay. But you started from a space, it sounds like, in your journey of being someone under that leadership, then stepping into a place of leadership, then being able to create this tool to create that
sure.
kind of culture.
Oh, listen, I started my first ad agency because I was a part of an employee group of a multinational billion-dollar advertising firm. And I was living inside as an employee, and I'm looking at the senior management going, these guys are knuckleheads. And honestly, we were acquired by this company. And 18 months later, I walked out the door with six of their clients. I didn't have a non-compete, so I didn't do anything illegal, but they were drawn to me. And many of them would come in private and say, thank you. Thank you for coming. We can't live in this, you know. There was like the gulag.
Well, I want to know one thing.
Yeah.
When you started to get the blood panel back.
Yes.
The trust pulse back. And you started to help people not only market their product, but market their culture.
Yeah, we came back with, when we had this aha moment, we said, okay, if we take now what we've learned about interpersonal relationships and trust building and port it over to a boardroom, put it into a corporate organization and context, would things shift? And yes, they did. It was very dramatic. You know, I called products and services the sea of sameness, right? How many salad dressings can there possibly be in an aisle in a grocery store? And how do you possibly make a decision? It creates paralysis. And by the way, whatever you buy, it's the wrong choice. And then you feel horrible about that decision. Well, it doesn't matter whether it's salad dressings or computers or banking, or it doesn't matter what the service is. Our point was, your golden ticket is not going to be found in product development or service delivery. It's going to be found in the values that underpin your organizations. Because I can tell you guys, one of the things that has shifted dramatically from a consumer perspective is that we don't hold companies responsible for mistrust. We hold leaders of companies responsible when they break our trust. And so it's become personal. And now as consumers, our little antenna are up, you know, our phony meter is up. We know if there's an inauthentic leadership in an organization. We know if they're just writing checks in a way they call it greenwashing, writing checks. It's not part of the strategy of the organization. They just want the community to look at them as something that they're really not. And that creates a lot of problems for employees who, by the way, they're the ones that are the front line. Senior management hides behind lawyers and their C-suite. They're very comfortable up there because very few of them are actually on the line every day as the face of that company to a customer. And imagine if there's distrust inside, it's going to spill outwardly, right? Into all the relationships outside.
That brings up a question. When you are doing the trust pulse on the corporation, are you doing that based on the relationships of the culture? And that's what you're testing, is their trust in the leadership, their trust in each other, all the above?
It's peer-to-peer, it's management and senior management. And we're looking through the filter of our components of the vials that you're giving us blood. You're giving us your blood, and there's five of them that really underpin the relationship.
But you also did customers, didn't you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So yeah, imagine a chief marketing officer of an organization who has no idea whether his customers trust him or not. And by the way, there's a study that was created about a year ago, Price Waterhouse study, that said that 81% of senior executives believe that their customers trust them, while only 27% of the customers say the same.
Wow.
So there is an enormous trust gap, right? And it's primarily because many organizations do not take the time. They see trust as a nice to have, right? Not as a must have. And we're proving otherwise every time we deploy this.
Say that again.
Senior executives in many organizations view trust as an add-on. Yeah, that's nice to have, but we're bottom line oriented. And, you know, it's taken a while for companies like ours to help convince even the most skeptical CEOs that trust is everything to them. And the reason many of them are lost and can't find their way and can't understand how to sustain growth and success has nothing to do with products. It has everything to do with relationships, and many of them are blind to it.
Yeah. Well, with my background in counseling, I know that figuring out the diagnosis is really important.
Yes.
Because if you have the wrong diagnosis, you can treat the wrong thing and make things worse.
Yes.
But if you get the right diagnosis, let's say a company comes in and they do the trust pulse, and now you know that they need work in a particular area. What was the fastest turnaround, and what was the longest turnaround time frame for a company that you worked with?
Fastest turnaround was for a small organization that was actually related to our own business. It was a marketing firm that was a part of a larger association that my company belonged to, and we deployed it. They were growing. They had a home office, and now they had acquired two other companies, and they were kind of meshing employees together. And so they did an internal trust pulse study, because this was about 6 months into their acquisition. They were looking to find out if there was harmony inside, because they were having growth issues. employees didn't know each other coming from different organizations. And it was quite revealing for them in terms of areas that they needed to improve to welcome in these other employees and help them understand more of the culture that they were walking into. It wasn't being disseminated in a way that was direct or where they felt welcomed in. So you started to have little camps being set up. That one took about 3 months, you know.
What do you measure that on? What is the, is it growth? Is it the business growth? Is it the culture change? What's, how did you measure that change?
For them, it was an internal measurement of culture shift, and it improved dramatically. And you had that not only in the data that came back in from the survey, but also every survey contains a lot of area for personal injection of feelings and thoughts. And so you're basically getting a testimony from everybody, which is beautiful about the data that comes back with this, because it isn't just a data point. There's a human being behind this who's commenting, and you're getting a beautiful picture, a deeper picture of trust.
It actually becomes a data point, because as you see the community and the connection that you're creating,
yes,
in this culture, that reflex of them wanting to stay longer, which means less,
yes,
turnover, all those kind of things.
Now, the real, let me just add one quick thing,
ahead,
Steve. The real kicker on this is that they had so much success from that, that we then turned our sights outward to their clients and their customers. Okay. So now they had a good picture of, let's call it self-awareness, right? Use a human term. They were self-aware of what their issues were internally. They were putting programs in place to shore that up. And then they decided to do, with our help, an external. So we went to all of the clients, not only of their agency, their company, but also the companies that folded into their company. And we surveyed all of their customers and found it was eye-opening. It was eye-opening for them to see areas of weakness that needed strengthening up, bolstering up to strengthen their relationships with their customers. But here was the cool thing. Many of the comments that came back from their customers said, the fact that you even reached out to ask us says something about your organization.
Amen.
Right? So how many times are we so focused on ourselves that we don't even take the focus off to put it on the other person and say, well, how do you feel about this?
So listening, I told you, you got forced into being a counselor. Well, I want to switch gears a little bit. I think we've heard that the Trust Pulse was this created measurement that you developed, then you were able to help people. I'm thinking, if I were the investor in that company you were talking about, I'm putting money in and buying opportunity. Well, they probably wouldn't have walked away in 6 months if they felt it still had potential. But in 3 months, you gave them hope that their investment was a good investment.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, too many of us are measuring IQ, and we want to measure TQ.
Yeah.
What's your trust quotient?
Yeah. So I can see that you helped that company speed up their growth, which sped up their connection with each other, their trust level, their production went up. You know, now they're building on a solid base,
yes,
of performance and support rather than fighting the battles within,
yeah,
before they even got to presenting to their customer base. So I get all that, mm-hmm, and I'm going, man, if I'm at that top level decision place,
mm-hmm, right,
that makes a whole lot of sense, but I didn't put it into my investment plan. Mm-hmm. I didn't budget. If guys are making moves, reorgs in their company or whatever, this would be a place where they need to have a line item that says Trust Pulse.
Absolutely. It's one of the best investments that they can make.
Yeah.
So I have a question. Because it's about trust,
yes,
and it's about vulnerability and all,
yes,
of the things that you talked about. How do you help them become comfortable with what they're going to be diagnosed with? Because that in itself can be a level of vulnerability for a leader. And how do you help them through that process?
I'll tell you what's beautiful about this, AJ, is that one of the things that we encourage leadership to do is to socialize this through the organization. When a leader stands in front of his or her employee base and says, you know what, I want to invite you in. Mm-hmm. I want to invite you into a survey. The reason that we're doing this survey is that, you know, I feel like we're a successful organization, But I also feel as though there may be areas that I'm missing, that we're missing as senior management. We care about the employees. We're probably not batting 1,000. But one of the things that I really want all of us to feel together is a sense of purpose, why this place was created in the first place. And it's very easy for the dust to kind of collect again just because of apathy, or you just get into a routine. And it's time to, like we would for our own personal health, is to get a checkup. And that's what we're doing. We're investing in this as a group. We're going to learn together as a group. I know that senior management is going to learn a lot out of this. And we want to hear you. You know, this is your opportunity to tell us how we're doing for you. And do you feel purpose?
I love that. That is so connective.
And so what are we training the leadership? Be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. It's a strength. It's not a weakness. They're not going to turn on you. And for the few that are come back and say, it's about time you asked us, you know, hey, let me give you a piece of my mind. Fine. Let them do that. Let them do that. That's what an open organization allows to happen. And that trust can still be there. As a matter of fact, it's going to grow trust that you heard them out, because that's one thing that we get back from employees is that they heard me. And by the way, when you then deploy programs to go at those areas where there were gaps, and the employees are part of that as well, now you're building
a
collaborative
invested.
Environment, yes. And they're invested. And now you've got this bottom-up push. It's not the top-down constantly saying, we've got to produce more, you've got to work harder. It's, no, we want to work harder. We're not going fast enough. So when we can push each other, that's when great things happen. And that only happens in community.
Well, I know too much. And I know that there's another podcast with what you do and how to do it so you get engagement of your employees. But we're going to hide that. We're going to put that in another box for another time, because I want to hear the backstory. How did you develop this measurement tool? I mean, who did you trust? To develop this measurement tool with.
Hang tight. We'll jump back into the conversation in just a moment. Do you know someone living on purpose? We'd love to hear their story. Nominate them at abqonpurpose.com. And while you're there, check out our growing library of inspiring interviews. All right, back to the story.
Steve, I was blessed at the time. I had literally run out of gas. I'd been in that business for so long, and this was kind of like a somebody throwing me a life preserver. When the switch flipped for me from marketing and advertising to interpersonal relationship building, that was like some oxygen. I needed to put on my oxygen mask first, so that I could help others. At the time, God had put a young man in front of me, Chesley, who was our strategic planning director. And Chesley had his MBA in behavioral science and social science. And he was that wonderful voice in my ear. He would let me cry myself to sleep in his office. I was his boss, but I felt like I was having a Dr. B session with this young man, because he had a completely different filter on. He taught me so much. Which, by the way, you're never too old to learn from somebody who you do trust. And so it was a dance for a while, because we came from completely different backgrounds. But I felt like he kept showing up. You know, he was modeling our model before we even developed it. And I trusted him that I could open up and be vulnerable and share as a leader in an organization that I had issues. And it was Chesley who really helped me understand that we needed to put a different filter on. So literally with his help, we looked at, I'm going to say at the time, you know, 50, 60 years of social science research coming out of World War II. That's when social science scientists flooded with studies on a great trust violation that occurred during that war. And so we were studying all of these social science studies that were coming and flooding the marketplace. And what we found through sifting through all of that were these five, we put it into our 5 C's model, and that became our anchor, a foundational kind of roadmap that individuals and organizations can use. And by the way, very quickly, I want to remind our listeners that while this has a corporate context around it, it's interpersonal relationships. AJ, you could take the Trust Pulse survey yourself tonight and hand it to your husband and have him do the Trust Pulse study about you, and then put that information together and see your health checkup. in terms of how are you showing up every day in your relationship with him? And conversely, how is he showing up in his relationship with you? And learn together steps that can be taken to strengthen trust in your own relationship. So that's the beauty of it. And by the way, that's why employees love interacting with this tool, because it's personal, it's real.
And it's got to get to that level, or it isn't trust.
Yes. That's right.
It's manipulation if it's somebody else.
I was just thinking the same thing.
Helping you and your husband get along.
That's right. That's right.
Those are the tools, like you said about the marketing, but why someone would want to purchase something or receive something is because they feel their connection.
Yeah.
And they're heard.
That's what consumers are telling us now, is that I think the last study I saw on this said that 81% of consumers say that trust is implicit in the decisions that they make on the products that they purchase. So, you know, you can bang it out with your big competitors on a daily basis with your products and services. But if you haven't earned trust, especially in commodity markets like pizza or consumable goods, anything that's highly competitive and even commodity in nature, what makes a pizza different from another in a fast food environment? Well, we may have our little picadillos on things that we like, but the fact of the matter is I'm going to go to the organization that I trust. It's why I'm such a devotee for In-N-Out Burger. And by the way, I did the Trust Pulse in In-N-Out. I got to meet the CEO of In-N-Out, and she is an amazing human being who came in, as she self-admitted, unprepared to take the mantle of the organization that her parents and grandparents built. It was a $3 billion company when she walked in at 28 years old. And she said, all I could tell my employees is that I would love them. And I let all of the people that my parents and grandparents put in place, I had to trust them because my parents trusted them. And even though I couldn't deliver as a seasoned CEO, I could promise these people that I would love them. And that's why are there lines, you know, in California, there were lines. I'm in Texas now. There's still lines around In-N-Out. There's certain brands that carry that aura around them because they're good. They're good to their employees. They're good to the community. They have taken the effort and have been intentional in building deep relationships, which is no surprise that their success has been sustained all these years.
So I'm going to dream a little bit about, I'm going to start a business, and I happen to hear about this guy, Mike, that does a Trust Pulse, and I'm trying to build a team and trying to get started, and I could do a Trust Pulse with my startup team before I even had customers.
Yes.
And I could then use that information to create a path for my future company that we were going to be fiscally sound,
mm-hmm,
and culturally relevant and personally trust-based.
Yes, yes.
And I would have a better chance of succeeding because everybody had a chance to give their input, not just my single path idea. Would that be a smart thing, Mike?
Steve, you're speaking into really hitting my heart and soul now, because I have this affinity for startups, because my company was a startup. I've been an entrepreneur my whole life, so I understand the brain of an entrepreneur. We've even advocated into business schools in universities that they need to be teaching trust. They need to be teaching values and trust as a part of the business plan. And as you said earlier, there needs to be a line item for taking this Trust Pulse on an ongoing basis, just like an annual physical. And the reason that I love startups and entrepreneurs is that they're still dreaming. They have dreams and visions. This is personal to them. Many of them are investing everything that they have to build this dream. As corporations get large, my experience is that they switch from dreaming to survival. It's, you know, we need to feed the organism to keep it moving forward and keep it on life support. But we're not thriving, but I'm still collecting a paycheck. But for a young entrepreneur to lead with trust, and by the way, we were using this Trust Pulse in our own organization when we were hiring people.
Hmm.
We wanted to understand whether they were relational, whether they were competent, whether they developed consistent performance, whether they displayed candor. How did they show concern? And did they connect? Were they intentional about connecting with the people around them? And then guess what? Annual review time. Those were the five keys. Yes, they had to perform their duty and, you know, their job title. But beyond that, what were they contributing to the organization, the people around them? Were they trustworthy? And were they growing trust in the organization? That was the way to measure ultimate success.
Yeah, I had this thought about trust. We think the way we've been talking about it is trust. We want the leadership to be trustworthy and so top down. Mm-hmm. But we know that motivation, if you're not trust the leadership, the trust up,
yeah,
bottom up, you lose energy very quickly and yes, you don't perform well. So
yes,
the trust is, I like the word pulse because it's just like the blood system.
Yeah.
It's getting oxygen and nutrition to the extremities, and then it's bringing all that stuff back and processing it through the filter system so that then you've got a fresh batch of blood or trust going
yes,
back up.
Well, yeah, Steve, here's the beauty, and we all know this and we feel it. There's reciprocity when you build trust. Can you think of a better feeling as a human being that you've had, that you've experienced or will experience, than a tight, trusting relationship with someone that you deeply care about, that you've been intentional with, that has your back, that allows you to be you? You don't have to wear a mask in a trusting relationship. You know, so that reciprocity is one of the things that drives us. The deeper, that's what I love in watching people transform, because the more that they are open, the more that there's reciprocal action back to them from the person on the other side, you see the joy, mm-hmm, you see the oxytocin, you see the, you know, the dopamine, you know, from the neuroscience side of things. It all collects together and you get into a flow. We all feel it. We know. The very first time that we deployed this survey, Steve and AJ, was for our own employees. And there were very simple questions. We said, what does a trusting relationship look and feel like? And what does a distrustful relationship look and feel like? Well, what do you think we heard? No, duh. I didn't have to be a social scientist to understand the response.
Well, I'm looking at AJ's face because of recording him on my computer, you know. And I'm looking at AJ and I've thought, well, let's bring it right home. So, AJ, without taking the questionnaire, and for our audience, for our listeners, because we both bring people to this, but they need to know that we haven't known each other very long, mm-hmm, and I trust you.
Very true.
Do you feel that?
Yes.
And I feel it, and your husband, you
yes,
told me he trusts me. And you told me your dad trusts me.
Yes. And my dad's very discerning.
We don't need Mike. Oh,
no. All right. I'm out. I just stirred up the pot. I'm out. You guys figure it out.
No, we want your trust pulls.
No, yeah. I love that, you guys, because listen, everybody that's listening to that, we all know this, right? We are all social scientists. We are all behavioral scientists. We know when we meet somebody, whether we're leaning in or we're leaning away. We know that feeling,
yeah,
right? We know that somebody that you meet one day and the next, it's like Jekyll and Hyde, and they're totally inconsistent. They seem like competent people when you meet them, but then the next time you meet them, you don't even know, you don't recognize them. Are you leaning into that relationship or are you leaning away? And why? Why is it, by the way, not because you're the host, AJ, but the first time I met you, I leaned in. Because you know what? You gave me space and you revealed enough about yourself to make me go, you know what? I want to know more about her, mm-hmm, you know? And so I leaned in, and that's a beautiful beginning, you know, of a relationship. And then as we perform over time in these areas, that relationship can get deeper and deeper and deeper. And by the way, it's also a way to measure whether you're in too deep on a relationship that is not going to be healthy for you. It'll help put up those signposts, you know, warning, Will Robinson.
It's a one-way street.
Yeah, yeah.
So if I'm listening out there, I have a question. I think maybe you might be able to help me with where I'm at, mm-hmm, where my company's at, but I don't know how to get a hold of you. How do I get a hold of you?
It's actually very easy. My website is thehighergroundlife.com. And you can reach out there. You can also go to Facebook and find us on Facebook at Higher Ground. That would be a great way to communicate. And you'll see there's resources available there, the Trust Pulse and other tools that we've developed. as well. But the thing that binds them all together is helping people walk that journey.
So is that the best place to get your book?
Yes. Choosing Higher Ground is on there. And then I recently created an ebook. It's the guidebook to building trusting relationships. And it walks through the model.
There's a book. Oh, I can get a taste test here. I can get the book and I can read.
Yes, absolutely.
I can tiptoe in.
And start thinking about how I could apply the pulse and how the pulse works. And I can start coming up with ideas and I can ask questions. I can ask better questions.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
How that could apply to my life and my company.
100%.
So Higher Ground.
Thehighergroundlife.com. Yes.
And we'll have a link on our website as well.
Wonderful.
So that people can go there and find you.
Terrific.
Link directly to you.
Wonderful. Yeah,
and one of our goals at Ask Better Questions on Purpose is to have a referral source for people that are on purpose. And I think you've got the idea.
Yes.
After listening to Mike that this is a life purpose issue. It's not, he didn't go, oh, I think I'll make some money. You know,
done that, been there.
This purpose orientation brings satisfaction. So let's conclude by asking a better question, each of us. Now, when you ask better questions on purpose, actually, you don't need an answer. Sometimes the question is where the value is, not the answer. And some of the best questions I've ever heard, it's almost like they're timeless. So let me ask for all three of us, what's a good question now that we've had this discussion? I'm going to start, AJ. We'll sandwich Mike in the middle, and AJ, you ended up. So we've talked about trust and how important it is. I'm going to ask the question, the next year, do you want to have more trust in your life? Do you want to trust more people in your life? How are you going to get there? Mike?
I would ask, what am I afraid of that's preventing me from being vulnerable?
Oof. Those are hard to follow up on. Those are fantastic. With everything it is that we've talked about regarding trust and what I've seen in trusting relationships, I would ask if there's something that is consistent. That was the word that just kept coming to me, and the consistency that I've seen in your character, Mike, in the short time that I've known you. So what is it about consistency that makes it trusting, or what is it about trust that creates consistency?
Oh, two for one on that one.
Love that.
See, when people are on purpose, we trust them more. And when we ask better questions about trust, we figure out that we need to be intentional. That came through with that. And I consider our conversation, actually, it could be a game changer for some people that are listening. So I just want to thank Mike for being Mike and stepping up to the mic. This has been a good time for me. Learned a lot, and I wouldn't have a problem recommending you to treat people with trust. That's all said and done, and thank you for your time, Mike. AJ, I like you. I'm glad we're doing this.
Likewise.
Thank you for tuning in to Ask Better Questions on Purpose. Join our growing community at abqonpurpose.com and share your favorite moments with a friend. Remember, get on purpose, stay on purpose, be on purpose. See you next time.